The Garden Question is a podcast for people that love designing, building, and growing smarter gardens that work. Listen in as we talk with successful garden designers, builders, and growers, discovering their stories along with how they think, work, and grow. This is your next step in creating a beautiful, year-round, environmentally connected, low-maintenance, and healthy, thriving outdoor space. It doesn't matter if you're a beginner or an expert, there will always be something inspiring when you listen to the Garden Question podcast. Hello, I'm your host, Craig McManus. Exploring the vast culinary experiences of edible flowers offers an exploration of flavors, colors, and textures. I had the pleasure of speaking with Denise Schreiber, an aficionado in the field of edible flowers, to unearth the inspirations, insights, and practices behind her fascination with a number of botanical delights. Denise's years of experience and experimentation shares her journey into the world of edible flowers, offering a slice of wisdom for enthusiasts and novice alike. A trip to England with friends led to discovering a simple pleasure of rose petal ice cream. It kindled her interest in edible flowers. It soon evolved into a 14-year endeavor of research, workshops, culinary explorations, and writing a book back in the States. Our conversation reveals not just the culinary potential of edible flowers, but also the journey of exploration and creativity they inspire. Whether you're a seasoned gardener or a curious cook, the world of edible flowers offers a unique blend of beauty, flavor, and history waiting to be discovered. Denise, what inspired your fascination with edible flowers, and how did you become so versed in this field?
Several years ago, two friends and I decided to take a trip to England, and we put together our own trip on what we wanted to see. We each got to pick some must-haves. Some were just, oh, this would be nice to visit. We flew to England. We taught ourselves to drive on the wrong side of the road at the airport. Off we went. We were there for 9 days. We put on 1,400 miles. We drove all over England and Wales. Some of the things we saw were like Sassenhurst and Hidcote, the really big famous gardens. We were at a little one called the Priory at Kemerton. Our last stop was Montesquieu Abbey in Hampshire. That is where all the David Austin roses are. That's where he had them planted, so they would be there in perpetuity. Like all good English gardens, there's a place for a spot of afternoon tea. My girlfriends are all about, ooh, having tea and crumpets or scones. I drink tea when I'm really sick. Scones and crumpets are okay, but they had rose petal ice cream. Since your people can't see me, if they'd see my hips, they know that there's always ice cream in my freezer. I had the rose petal ice cream. If you've ever smelled a flower and said it smells good enough to eat, that's exactly what it was. When we got back to the States, I worked for county government in the park system. They wanted me to do more programming. I thought I would do something on edible flowers, so I started doing a lot of research on it. I asked the master gardener if she wanted to speak about it, and she said, yeah, they want me to do more speaking too. So we put something in the newspaper, and I actually took off a couple of days. I figured I'd get 30 or 40 people to it. When I came back, there were 200 registered for this. I'm like, okay, I have to call this master gardener and let her know, because she thought it would be a small crowd too. I called her and I said, we're going to have 200 people there. And there was silence on the other end. Finally, she said, I guess it doesn't matter if I could ask if I bring one more person. It was a huge success. I did it for 14 years. We researched recipes. We did rose petal ice cream. We did roasted red pepper soup with nasturtiums. We would bake the soup, and then we would have a leaf of the nasturtiums, put a dollop of either creme fraiche or sour cream on top, and top it off with some flowers. That was one of the most popular things we ever served besides the ice cream. I found that children were more adventurous than the adults. Usually you can't get kids to eat anything besides chicken nuggets. It went really well. It got to the point where it was a little overwhelming because it's like cooking for a wedding.
Sounds like a great adventure that you had with that. How about sharing some insights into the history or the cultural significance of using edible flowers in culinary practices?
Actually, the Romans have been doing it for a few thousand years, as well as the Greeks and other ancient cultures. They used it for medicinal purposes. They used it for beauty purposes. They would take baths filled with rose petals, and they would eat it too. They would incorporate it into their foods. I don't know where you get that many rose petals to fill a bathtub, but I guess they had that option.
Would you highlight some of the nutritional benefits of incorporating edible flowers into your diet?
It's just fun. There's some vitamin C in there, but if you have to have a lot of vitamin C in your diet, eat some oranges, get some vitamins. There's really not a lot. A little bit of fiber would be about it.
What are some of the more popular edible flowers, and what flavors and textures do they contribute to a dish?
The roses can actually be sweet or savory. We did it as having it in ice cream, but we also did it as a chutney, if you will, where we would use fresh rose petals that were chopped up. We would use black cherries and chop them up. We would also use some either walnuts or pecans chopped. Mix them all up, add just the tiniest bit of rose water, which you can purchase in just about any Middle Eastern store or at the grocery store or online. We'd mix it up, and then we would serve it over cold roast beef. Lavender is another one that's sweet or savory. I actually make Mexican wedding cakes or Russian tea cakes. It's a little cookie with a lot of powdered sugar on it. You can snip some lavender into it. You always want to be careful. You don't want to overdo it because you don't want your food to taste like perfume because there's a lot of camphor oil in it. You can also use it with chicken. You could soak it in some water and then you could tuck it into a chicken breast, either grill it, broil it, or bake it. Then you can remove it. It gives the chicken the flavor of the lavender, but it's not overwhelming. I want to say it more or less scents it rather than infuses it. Bee balm is really popular. Besides being a great pollinator plant, what we would do is we would harvest it and we would use it in a drink, like a lemonade. We made a mixture up of lime juice, the bee balm, white wine, and butter. And we put that over fish and bake it. You could get it both ways.
Sounds good.
Make you hungry?
Yeah. I'm glad I ate lunch right before recording this. Can the location of where the flower is grown affect the taste?
Absolutely. So you don't want to harvest along the side of the road. You're going to get a lot of car exhaust, and you don't know whose dog's been there before, too. So that's another reason not to do it. You can grow your own, so to speak. You can actually purchase a lot of these at some organic grocery stores. Sometimes they'll have like little packets where they have the vegetables. I prefer to grow them myself, mainly because sometimes in the grocery, they've been there for a while. They don't look so hot and obviously then won't taste so good. If you're out in a field and you happen to see them, as long as you know that they haven't been sprayed, you're on property that you're allowed to harvest them from, that'd be great.
How do you know if a flower is edible?
I have a list which you can share with your listeners. There's a lot of people like, oh, you can eat this, you can eat that. I once had a gentleman tell me, I can eat anything the deer eat. Deer eat tree bark and poison ivy. They're ruminants. They can eat almost anything. They also eat your lawn. I vetted all of my flowers through university websites, University of North Carolina, Penn State, Colorado State, Michigan State. Those are some of the places that you can go and look for edible flowers.
Are there certain parts of the flower that you shouldn't eat?
It depends on the flower. Now, you always want to remove the pistils and stamens whenever possible. For roses, you want to remove that little white part at the base of the petal because it's very bitter. You don't want to eat the rose leaves. They're not really tasty. Then you go to nasturtiums. And other than the roots, every part of a nasturtium is edible. The flowers are edible. The leaves are edible. The stems are edible. And if you wait long enough, the seed pods are actually edible. People will pickle them and use them in place of capers. I've never known anybody that waited that long. They were eating the flowers.
How do you recommend incorporating edible flowers into everyday cooking?
Look at the list, say the nasturtiums we used in a soup, and they go very well because they have a peppery flavor. You can throw them into a salad very easily. Something else that we used to do is we would get an edible flower mixture that was already dried, but you can make up your own. We would incorporate it into cream cheese, then we might save a few flowers and just decorate the outside. We would serve it as an appetizer. That would be a really good way for somebody to start. I can guarantee you that if you do that, you can impress anybody that comes to your house.
Do you dive right in and just make a whole meal out of flowers, or should you ease yourself into it?
You should ease yourself into it. People who have severe asthma, you should avoid flowers that are like a ray flower, what we call like a sunflower with that big center and a flat petals. You should probably avoid that. Pansies are great. They're sweet. People ask me what flower they taste like. Really, they have more of a floral scent rather than saying, oh, it's like frog's legs. They taste like chicken. No, you can't do that. You can just get that floral scent to whatever you're eating. But pansies are another good one. In fact, pansies are very popular with bakers. They will paint them with a little bit of egg white, dip them in some very fine granulated sugar, and let them dry a little bit. And then they use them as decorations on cakes.
What about daylilies?
Daylilies are very edible. Don't get what they call the ditch lilies that are on the side of the road because they're meh. The lighter the daylily flower, better flavor they have. And now they are coming out with some fragrant daylilies as well, something that hasn't been there in a while. You can eat the daylily flower. Keep in mind, you start harvesting your daylilies. There's only so many flowers per stem. You won't have any flowers, but you can use it as a serving cup. So you remove the pistil and stamen, and that's the part that's in the middle. You can stuff it with chicken salad, anything along those lines. It's more on the savory side, so you wouldn't be putting ice cream in there. You can also harvest the daylily buds. You can saute them, serve them as a side vegetable, or serve them in a hot salad of some kind. Just saute them in some butter, but you want to get them before they open.
What are some common misconceptions about edible flowers that you have encountered, and how do you address them?
Oh, you mean the guy who said he can eat whatever the deer eat?
Yeah.
I tell them to verify if it's edible. There are some things that look wonderful. Oh, I really want to eat it. A good example is Brugmansia or Datura, and they're highly poisonous. So you don't want to eat them, even though they look very inviting as a meal. Before you start eating these, investigate. Sometimes at a restaurant, a chef will place some flowers on the plate, not necessarily edible. I can tell you the ones I usually see are some orchids. They are edible. Impatiens that we normally don't think of are edible. But you always want to make sure they've got them from a reliable source and they haven't been sprayed. That's always a big thing.
Are there places that we shouldn't be eating flowers from?
You don't want to get flowers that A, have been sprayed. You don't want to get them from florists or nurseries unless they're an organic nursery and they haven't been sprayed with anything.
How do climate and geography influence the availability and diversity of edible flowers?
It depends on where you're growing them in your garden and maybe your neighbor's garden. Or in my case, I'm in Pittsburgh and you're in Georgia and our soils are very different. It will affect the flavor of flowers somewhat. It also depends if somebody has been fertilizing their flowers. I don't care what kind of fertilizer you use, as long as you are fertilizing them on a regular basis. Obviously, you don't want to pour the fertilizer onto the flower. You want to put it at the base.
Are there any lesser known edible flowers that you believe deserve more attention? And what makes them unique?
There are some flowers that people don't necessarily think about. One is calendula, which is also known as the pot marigold. It is edible. It's got a little sour taste to it, is the best way to put it. But a lot of people will put it in a soup. There's false red yucca, which doesn't necessarily grow all over the United States. It might grow down in your climate. It does not grow for me. However, I had it down in Dallas, and it actually has the flavor of a cross of corn and a fresh pea. I know that's a weird description. One that almost everybody grows, if they're growing it because they like it, is the garlic scape. So when you're growing garlic, when it's about ready to be harvested, it will send up that flower shape that kind of curls. That's actually really big in all kind of cooking. I have friends who make garlic scape pesto. But you cut it off the stalk because you don't want it to flower. Then there's a little seed pod nutlet. You remove that. You can chop that up, eat it fresh. You can saute it. It's used a lot in Asian dishes. I have friends that every year they're making garlic scape pesto.
I got some garlic growing. Maybe I can do that.
You can try it. You can saute it and maybe put it with something, your chicken or whatever you're cooking.
Yeah, yeah. All right, how about growing edible flowers? Are any tips for the home gardener or even if you're growing it on a balcony?
When you're growing it on a balcony, the best thing is to make sure you keep them well watered. Just in general, if you're going to have a dish that you're going to use the edible flowers in, it is best to harvest it early in the morning. You can bring it in. You can actually prepare it, throw it in a little Ziploc type bag that's open, and keep it in your refrigerator until you're ready to use it. Because in the morning, that's when all the essential oils are on the petals.
Are there any cultural or regional variations in the use of edible flowers that you found particularly interesting?
The western part of the country, they will use a lot more fresh flowers just because of their temperatures and more access to them. Whereas right now, it's 40 degrees outside. There's nothing flowering up there at all except my daffodils. Daffodils are poisonous, obviously not edible. Tulips are edible. They have a sweet flavor to them. You could actually take the pistils and stamens out, pop in some chocolate mousse, have that as a dessert.
Can you just pop the petals off and eat them off the stem?
You can, and like roses, you want to remove the bitter base, that little white part. It's hard and it's nasty. Mm. The more fragrant the flower that you know is edible, the better the flavor is as well.
How do you see the future of edible flowers evolving in culinary trends and practices?
I think it's been trending more and more each year. I get some of the food magazines. These chefs are incorporating it into their dishes just in different ways. Some of them do off-the-wall stuff where they do potato foam. I'm sorry, I like mashed potatoes. I don't need potato foam. But they are incorporating it into their higher-end dishes. That's the best way to put it.
You've written a book on edible flowers. Would you tell us about it?
The book has the list of edible and not so edible flowers. It has pictures of the flowers or the whole plant. It talks a little bit about how to grow them and those sort of things and the sense appeal. And then even the uses for each flower, there's a number of recipes also in the book as well. The rose petal ice cream is in there. We have caramelized onions with lavender, which you just use as a condiment. The name of the book is Eat Your Roses, Pansies, and Lavender, and 49 Other Delicious Flowers. I have to tell you a story about when we were photographing the cover. My brother had gotten a bottle of vodka for Christmas from somebody, and it had a very fancy glass with it. Metal branches as the stem and the base. Oh, this would be perfect. I asked him if I could use it, and I went out to his house one morning. My brother's in his kitchen, and he's swearing six ways the Sunday up and down. I'm like, what's wrong? Yeah. I broke the glass. It was that really thin glass that you look at crooked and it breaks. So I went to the dollar store, and you can buy plastic champagne glasses. We got the glass out of there. I got some tacky wax. I popped in the fake champagne part, and that's what we used for the book cover, but you'd never know it.
Are children good to eat flowers?
Children are way more adventurous than the adults. They can, but I like to say children over the age of 4, just because when you have small children, the pediatricians tell you don't feed them strawberries, don't feed peanuts or peanut butter and pineapples, some things that can sometimes cause allergic reactions in children. I like to wait till they're at least 4 or older. I got to tell you, they like the savory stuff more than the ice cream.
What do you find most rewarding about gardening?
It's relaxing. It takes my mind off other stuff. I can just go out there and dig away and just think about, oh, do I want to do this? Oh, there's a weed over there. Just, oh, look at the earthworms that I just dug up. It just takes my mind off everything else.
What do you wish people would do differently when designing or building or growing a garden?
It's right plant, right place. Today I was driving along and I actually saw a big viburnum planted right next to a weeping cherry. This viburnum is going to get a lot bigger, but at some point the owner's going to have to decide which one they want to cut down. My thought is you should cut them both down and actually start over because they were actually on a property line. The houses were close together. The next door neighbor could easily say, you're weeping cherries on my property and I have stuff growing underneath it. In Pennsylvania, they have the legal right to cut to the property line. You'd have a lopsided weeping cherry. People get touchy about their plants. And the neighbors like throwing rocks at each other or doing all kind of weird stuff.
What garden myth would you like to smash?
I got 3. One is the planting by the moon. And I've even had some like master gardeners say, oh, yes, it works. Not really, because you cannot accurately reproduce the same conditions from year to year. 1 year it might be snowing, 1 year it might be raining. 1 year, the soil temperature could be very cold. People don't think about soil temperature as opposed to air temperature. There's a big difference. There might not be the same amount of nutrients in that soil because whatever was planted there last year could have changed. It might not have the same amount of moisture in the soil. It could be the moon's a little different. So, yeah. If you want to believe it, that's fine, but it's not going to really work. I believe it's the Farmer's Almanac at one point, or maybe just Grandma's Tale about having a pregnant woman plant your seeds because she's fertile and therefore your garden will be fertile. The only thing you're going to find is maybe you're buried in the garden because a pregnant woman took a shovel to your head and said, enough, you're not pregnant, I am. There's other things. That Dawn dish soap concoction with vinegar and Epsom salts and whatever. It seems to vary from year to year what there's actually in there. There is a horticultural vinegar that's great for killing weeds. There are other organic weed killers that you can purchase, but I'm from Pittsburgh. We are the home of Heinz 57. Heinz 57 vinegar is 5% acetic acid. The horticultural vinegar is 20% acetic acid. That will kill most weeds. The other concoction is going to maybe top kill some annual weeds. What you are going to do is you're going to kill a lot of beneficial insects, including earthworms. They think they're being organic, but actually they're becoming a garden thug by using that mixture. The other favorite that it should be coming around soon is how you sex peppers. If it has four bumps, it's good for eating. If it has three bumps, it's good for cooking. But they haven't figured out what they're going to call jalapenos and chili peppers because there's only one bump and it's right at the end.
Are there any garden traditions or practices that have been passed down through your family?
My mother always liked to plant Italian tomatoes, mainly because we are Italian. I always grow two or three different Italian-type tomatoes, mainly paste tomatoes because I can make sauce. I get a lot of seeds from Italy. One of my favorites that I just discovered a few years ago because they just started offering it is San Marzano Ridotta, as opposed to the regular San Marzano. Regular San Marzano is an excellent tomato. The Ridotta is somewhere between 6 and 10 ounces. It's a much bigger tomato. It doesn't have as many seeds. However, you can save the seeds. I grow Whopper Improved, which is a good all-purpose eating tomato. It originally was developed by Organic Gardening for Organic Gardening's 50th anniversary. I grow a tomato called Delicious, which is very delicious. It's a beefsteak type. Last year, the All-America Selections came out with Pink Delicious. I'm always leery about new and improved, so to speak. I have to tell you, this is a fabulous tomato. It's big. It's got nice sweetness to it. The skin doesn't crack. It tends to be a little more disease resistant, which as far as I'm concerned, anytime it's disease resistant, it's a plus in my book. So that's one that will definitely be in the garden again this year.
Would you share a funny garden story with us?
I grow zucchini, and I grow one called Bossa Nova. It is a light green zucchini with just some dark stripes. It's a great zucchini because even when they get to be big, they don't get pithy like a lot of other zucchini do. I grow it in a container right on the deck. I was getting ready to go to a trade show a couple of years ago, so I told my husband, there's a zucchini out there. It's just a few inches long. Make sure you pick it before I come home because I didn't want to come home to a baseball bat. I came home and I had a baseball bat. I said to my husband, why didn't you pick the zucchini? He said, I was waiting for it to get ripe. No matter if you grow the old-fashioned type or the new type, they're always one color. There's no getting ripe like a tomato.
What is your earliest garden memory?
I grew up in my grandmother's house, me, my mother, my dad, when I was a little kid. Grandma's from the old country. We had a garden. She was a farmer over there. We planted tomatoes. One year, my dad decided he had to fertilize the tomatoes because nobody else had. Then grandma decided she was going to fertilize the tomatoes because no one had. Then my mother fertilized the tomatoes because no one else had. At the end of the season, we had a jungle. I was probably 5 or 6 at the most. I was the only one that could get into the garden to find the ripe tomatoes. After that, okay, did anybody fertilize the tomatoes? I don't know what kind of fertilizer they used back then. It's one of the reasons I've always been in the garden. Grandma had fruit trees. She grew carrots. I'm not a huge vegetable eater. That sounds terrible. But I love a good fresh carrot. I would pull them out of the ground, foliage and all, go over the hose them off, just sit there and eat the whole thing. Grandma used to get a little upset with me because she'd go for carrots and there weren't as many as she thought there'd be. I want to eat a cooked carrot. I'm sorry, they've destroyed the texture and the flavor. A raw carrot has got that sweetness and that texture and just that freshness that you want in a vegetable.
Why'd you decide to pursue horticulture as a profession?
I came to horticulture later in life. I worked as a overseas operator for AT&T long before you could just pick up the phone and dial it. I did that for a few years, and I was like, yeah, I really didn't like doing that. I ended up tending bar. I was a manager of a restaurant in downtown Pittsburgh. One of my customers knew that I liked plants, and she was telling me that our local community college was offering free tuition, books, anything else you needed if you had been laid off any time since 1980. I got laid off in 1980 because I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter. My boss says, I don't want you falling. You go home, collect unemployment and everything. So I did. I collected unemployment. So I qualified for this. They had a two-year program here at the college, which is 5 minutes from my house. They had two tracks. One was landscape design and the other was floriculture. I went into the floriculture side of the program. I loved it. And after that, I managed to get a job working in what they call interior scaping, like they had in the malls, all the plants. I worked in a nursery for a year. I was able to get a job with our county park system, Allegheny County Parks, which is about 12,000 acres of parkland. I stayed there until I retired. I loved what I did. There's nothing like the smell of a greenhouse in the spring when you walk in and you just have that smell. I didn't miss other parts of that job, unloading trucks and bending over planting it, but I loved doing the seeds and the plugs, doing the beginning part. And coworkers said the same thing. That's what they miss. So this time of year, I go into greenhouses and sniff.
What is your most valuable garden estate?
Not taking care of my back, because you've got to be careful. I ended up going into physical therapy because I had to see an orthopedic surgeon. You've got to take care of your back and you've got to prep for garden season. If you don't, you're going to pay for it in so many ways that you could never think of.
What have you recently learned about horticulture?
I attended a seminar back in September with Dr. Glenn Percival, who is the senior Bartlett tree researcher for them. He was talking about some of the things that they are seeing in their research that's really opening their eyes. One is using a product called biochar, which is produced through pyrolysis. If it's done properly, it retains moisture. It helps soil tilth. It helps your soil. You're in Georgia. You have clay. I'm in Pennsylvania. We have clay and leftovers from the glaciers that came through. The other thing he talked about was using single species mulch. He mentioned using cherry. So if you've got someone in the neighborhood chipping cherries or maples, hey, you can leave those chips right in my driveway. The most amazing one that they are seeing is willow mulch, which contains salicylic acid, which if you don't know what salicylic acid is, think about your basic aspirin, because that's the main ingredient in it. And so he was showing slides of no mulch, then regular mulch and the willow mulch. These are the same trees planted at the same time, receiving adequate watering and everything else. The trees with the salicylic acid mulch were 10 times better than the one that had no mulch, at least 5 times better than the one that had like mixed mulch. I made friends with an arborist and I'm like, yeah. They said something about they might have to cut down a willow tree somewhere. I said, you have my address. Just leave it in the driveway. You don't even need to tell me it's coming. Just leave it there. I'll know.
Standing order for willow mulch.
Yes. I could use a lot of mulch. Mm-hmm.
Would you give a beginning gardener your best tip?
Plant what you like. Don't overdo it. just enjoy it and always try something new. At least one new plant a year that's out of your comfort zone. If you like growing tomatoes, grow kohlrabi. I like to call that the alien vegetable just because it looks like an alien. Try it. It's like a spicy radish if you've never grown it. Easy to grow. Just try one new thing. If it's flowers, pick something that you've had difficulty growing before. If you only grow marigolds, maybe grow Belzebiolin, just as a suggestion. Just because it's something different, you may discover that you like doing these different things. If it fails, try something new next year. No one ever got it right the first time. You can reach out to your master gardeners or your extension and say, there's six of us, there's two adults and four children. How much should I plant of tomatoes or peppers or whatever? They can give you a good approximation of how much you should actually be growing.
I'd like for you to complete this statement. In my garden, I have
a miniature Eiffel Tower and a big green thumb. When I was working, there was a theater group there, and they had pitched this iron piece of metal that looked like the Eiffel Tower. I guess they maybe used it in one of their plays. I reached out to them just to make sure they were pitching. They said, oh, yeah, and I brought it home. It's in my vegetable garden where I plant some annual vines that grow up and just let the pollinators visit. While they're there, they can stop at my tomatoes or my beans. The big green thumb is actually in a landscape bed. It's about 2.5 feet tall. It's big and it is green.
What did you learn from your garden last year that you're applying this year?
I want to plant earlier than I did last year. There were some reasons I didn't get it planted early enough. I don't want to plant when there's going to be frost, which we can have up till May 30th, but usually we're good by Mother's Day. I need to harvest more often. Sometimes it's too hot. I don't feel like going out into the garden. I need to get out there. Even though I do this for a living, it's like the shoemaker's children are always barefoot. Get out there, thin your radishes or your carrots. Make sure you get out there and thin them or cut back whatever you need to cut back in your garden that year. Like I said, the shoemaker's children are always barefoot.
What is your latest bout of creativity in your garden?
I have deer in great quantity. My burrow is 2 square miles. We have about 200 deer per square mile. We've actually had deer in downtown Pittsburgh. I am not allowed to put a fence up over 6 foot. My property boundaries are pretty long. I really don't like the look of stockade fencing. 6 foot chain link looks like a prison. What I did is I do have a chain link fence that's shorter. I have 4x4 posts in the garden. I took 4 foot high welded fence and put it around the whole perimeter of the garden. Then I took another roll of fencing 4 foot high and did it on top of that. So I actually have 8 foot fencing around my vegetable garden. That keeps Bambi out. It keeps the groundhog out and doesn't keep the bunnies out so much. And it definitely doesn't keep the chipmunk out.
If you could garden anywhere in the world for a season besides your home garden, where would it be and why?
England. My girlfriends and I were there. My girlfriend, who is a landscape architect, made the observation that the English grow what they know they can grow. We try to grow what we can't grow. And we end up being disappointed. We get lucky once in a while, but not enough. There's plants that they can grow there that we simply can't grow here, no matter what. One of them is gunnera, which is a huge leafed plant. You need a lot of moisture, but you can't have any type of frost because it just takes it out. It's a great architectural plant. I'd like to do that there. And then I could go visit more gardens while I'm there too.
You've got to pick one plant. What plant are you in love with this week?
Fragrant lilies. I grow one called Silk Road. It's about 7 to 8 foot tall. It is so fragrant. I go out in the evening. It just permeates my whole yard. It's beautiful and it's very prolific, actually. There's several blooms on a stalk. It just keeps getting bigger every year. I'm quite happy. There's more and more of it every year. The fragrance is just incredible. It used to be that I loved Casablanca, and there's nothing wrong with Casablanca. This just blows it out of the water as far as fragrance.
What is your favorite thing to do in the garden?
Just sitting out there, and I can hear the catbirds mewing, and I can watch the lightning bugs. It's just quiet. I hear crickets. That's one of my favorite things to do. I try to whenever I can.
Who is your biggest influencer?
There's actually two people. One was my mother growing up because she just had a love of the garden and tomatoes. More recently is Stephanie Cohen, who's known as the perennial diva. She is so supportive. Why don't you try this? It's great that you did this. All these comments. And you don't get that from a lot of people. My mother was my biggest cheerleader. She's been gone a number of years. Stephanie has stepped up into that position.
Great encourager.
Absolutely. Great mentor, which is always important. Everybody needs a mentor, but you can have your kids in the garden and be a mentor to them. Look, you can do this. I've been getting my grandson out there. My grandson's 7. We grow butterflies, so to speak. He likes playing with worms and bugs. He'll see one and he'll go, ooh, I said, no, he's a good guy. He goes, oh, I like him, which is good. Good kid. Yes. That's how I grew up. It's like, oh, worms. I was never afraid of worms. Two little boys next door. Their father was a police officer. My daughter would go show them a worm and they'd scream like, it's a worm. I had snakes as pets. They're afraid of worms.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts?
Just have fun in the garden. If you don't have fun in the garden, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it. You need to figure out what makes you happy in the garden.
Denise, tell us how people may connect with you.
They can connect with me in a number of ways. If they have a specific question, they can reach out to me on Mrs. Know-It-All on Facebook. In a few weeks, I am having a new website up called plantlikeapro.com.
This has been episode 155, Savoring Edible Flowers in Cooking and Gardening, with Denise Schreiber on the Garden Question Podcast. Thank you, Denise. You're awesome. The goal is that every episode is valuable and well worth your time. Please generously share the Garden Question Podcast with your friends, relatives, and neighbors. Check out our website, thegardenquestion.com, for links, resources, and where you can listen to every episode again and again. You will not want to miss a weekly episode, so please subscribe to the Garden Question Podcast with Craig McManus on your favorite listening app. Keep on designing, building, and growing a smarter garden that works.